TV podcast is back. Hello, friend. We're talking about Mr. Robot, my friend, in this episode.
The gentleman?
It's Mose. Are you wearing a mask?
No masks tonight. I have to scratch an itch.
I had to explain. Somebody was upset when we talked about the first, the premiere of Mr. Robot, because they said, you didn't say you were talking about episodes 1 and 2, but it just aired like as a 2-hour thing with an intermission, but it was actually a 2-hour premiere, which we said, and it's named episode, actually the file name of the episode is 2.0.
Yes.
For both of those parts, part 1 and part 2. So just to explain, we're here to talk about the episodes that are labeled 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3, which you might call episodes 3, 4, 5. You might call those episodes 2, 3, 4. You might call those episodes 1, 2, 3 if you count like the show does. It's very confusing.
It's Colonel Panic. It's gotten a little convoluted.
Yeah. So the episodes are called Colonel Panic, Init 1, and Logic Bomb. And the most recent one, we're going through the one that aired on USA Network August the 3rd. Just to clear it up, it's the one that ends, well, I'm not going to say, because then maybe you haven't seen that, but just, you know, you shouldn't. It's the one that ends with a lot of shocking violence, let's put it that way. That's what we're talking about.
Very shocking.
I was shocked. Mose, what's going on in this show? There is so much going on, and I gotta say, there are some characters that I see that I'm like, I don't even know who that guy is. Are we supposed to know who this guy is?
Okay, and are you talking about the guy I have in my notes, which is the Hispanic gentleman that is inside What's-Her-Face's car?
Yeah!
Yes.
Yeah, so
I totally agree.
So Joanna's got this guy that they've been basically paying off because he knows something, Joanna Wellick. And then she's got her guy who's like her driver slash hitman slash fixer dude that she employs.
Yes.
But there's the guy, and we see him, and this is not her buddy who she pays for sex. This is a different guy. And I'm not
sure. We've seen him before. We saw him in season 1. He's the guy that drives Elliot around.
Right. Right. So this guy is being paid off because he knows something, and then he keeps talking about how worried he is. And so across these episodes, what ends up happening is, because I don't think we should break them down episode by episode. We just take this big lump, try to figure out what and make sense of it. And I don't say that in a way that I haven't enjoyed watching it. I really enjoy watching it because I feel like I'm on this ride. Like I have no idea what's going to happen next. And the shots, like the framing of the camera, it is very strange and it seems to go in very odd directions. So I'm really enjoying the ride, but there are moments where I am totally confused. And this is one of them. And I think it wants us to be this way, which is he knows something. They're worried about it. And in the end, she has him killed. And that's actually that whole story where she demands that her guy not just shoot him, but like paralyze him so that he gets some time to think about the end of his life before he's killed.
Closure. Yeah. He has to understand the reason why it happened.
You know, it's not, I mean, it's totally in keeping with her character because Joanna was quite a piece of work in season 1 and she continues to be a spectacular piece of work in season 2. But that was quite a thing where it's like, I don't want you to just kill him. I want you to kill him, but what I want you to do is paralyze him so that he's got some moments to think about the end of his life.
And then I'm going to talk to my hitman to make sure those were fulfilled.
Yeah.
Did he look at you? I mean, really? This is the most cold-blooded stuff I've seen in a long time.
And what she says is, this is because we're not monsters.
Right?
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Right?
Okay. Here's the thing. That guy, after doing my homework today, I believe, I didn't go back to season 1, but I believe that he is the car, the parking lot attendant where last we saw Elliot.
Where Elliot wakes up in a car and he doesn't know what's happened because the hack has already happened at that point,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I think that it's him.
Okay, that could be. That was what I was wondering if that was who it was.
The internet will come back to us.
I'm sure they will. If they're still listening, if they aren't angry that we counted the episodes wrong. So that's one through line, which is interesting. So Joanna is running out of money, and she keeps saying, when my husband returns, all of this will happen. And she makes some demands at one point of like, you got to pay me what I'm owed for the severance. And they're dragging their feet. And she basically like makes an offer like, I'll testify that Tyrell didn't come back during the murder that he committed. If you give me the money, which is also, so she's not just playing games, but she's also running low on money and is kind of on edge. And then she's also getting these calls from that cell phone that she got taped under the music box that sound, you know, it's like breathing, but she thinks it's her husband's breathing. And I find that fascinating because that's a really interesting character, Tyrell Wellick. And I think everybody's sort of convinced that he's still alive, but that makes me feel like maybe he isn't still alive and that this is all just wishful thinking on her part. But I don't know.
But who in the world could it be on the other end? I mean, other than Elliot, potentially in his, but he hasn't really had any time lapses.
Yeah, well, okay. So what we do know is that Mr. Robot was running around doing stuff with Elliot blacked out in the first couple of episodes, right?
Correct.
So it's entirely possible that, and we saw him reach into the, like we talked about in the last episode where we were talking about Mr. Robot, he reached into the popcorn machine, right? It's got the gun in it. Or he was there at F Society in the arcade with Tyrell, and we know there's a gun in the popcorn machine.
Know that there is a spent shell that was inside that area.
Right, because Dom, our FBI agent friend, found it when they raided F Society.
It is the only piece of tangible evidence that they have.
Right, that there was anything going on there at all. Because they tapped into the power lines and all of those sorts of things. So, I think that's one of the questions that is overarching in this show is, what is Mr. Robot doing? Because we are not seeing, just as last season, it's an unreliable narrator. Or in this case, maybe, you know, Elliot's narrative is reliable, but the problem, you know, he's not trying to fool us, but he's not in control of his whole perspective.
That's true. However, he does take a ton, and as a former Adderall prescriptive user, I can tell you that he took way over the legal limits of anybody I've ever seen.
That felt to me like he was like losing it or trying to kill himself or something like that. Like he was willing to overdose and risk overdosing just to, you know, exercise Mr. Robot.
Right. And so I'm even thinking, like, even there, he's not using the morphine, but he's doing something else to keep Mr. Robot at bay.
Right.
And but so it's like, well, so can Elliot be a high functioning Adderall user and still be Mr. Robot? I don't know. I don't see that.
So that's the theme of the Init One episode that I really liked is that's the one where they're talking about playing chess to decide who's in charge. And halfway through it, I turned to Lauren and I said, she was like, this isn't going to go well. And I said, this isn't going to go anywhere because they are two sides of the same coin. I'm not sure that either Elliot or Mr. Robot is functional on their own. They are part of each other. It is all Elliot's overall psyche. You can't think of them as two separate people. They're two personalities in conflict inside him, but they're both, you know, the sum of them is Elliot as a whole. They're all inside his head. And that is the end of that episode, right? It's like he can't beat Mr. Robot, and Mr. Robot can't beat him. They will play to a stalemate. They have to figure out a way. I mean, ultimately, I suppose they need to figure out a way for Mr. Robot and Elliot to sort of integrate back into just being an Elliot personality. But at the very least, they have to find a way to get along because they're both in there and they're not coming out.
It's the symbiont circle, as young Obi-Wan would say, grossly. I don't want to bring that up, but go ahead.
So let's see. Well, let's talk about Agent Dom. She She does this research, so we find out that the F Society she discovers is the Fun Society arcade, and kind of convinces people to that it's relevant. She's got some skeptics at the FBI, but I like that isn't belabored. That like they're not like no, forget about it. Like there she gets some resistance, but she just kind of pushes through it, and we know she's right, and she knows she's onto something. And I like some of the twisty ways that her case gets built, like. There's the death, right? Romero is dead.
Yes.
And we find out that Romero was the one who had the arcade, and that's how he got recruited into F Society. And he's dead, and there's this whole thing about the connections that he makes into F Society that is sort of like that she's unwinding. And then in the Logic Bomb episode, we also find out that what is it that Romero was given up to somebody, the FBI maybe?
Yes.
And so we see how that connection got made, and there's an open question there about, you know, how he got killed and by whom, but obviously those connections were being made and that information is out there. So there's this whole kind of, she's getting the sense of the case that's going on. And I find that pretty cool, that because she's unwinding it and learning things that we don't actually know, even though we saw it happen.
And then we also learn through, now there are two major huge flashbacks that this place is cursed in some capacity.
Yeah, that the arcade has been, it sort of was abandoned, and it had terrible things that happened there, and it's like it's a bit, very bad place to be. But you know, speaking of flashbacks, we should also talk about we see Elliot become Mr. Robot in it. Yeah. One, we see he puts on the mask and he's talking to Darlene, and he's like saying no, I won't do it, and he kind of puts on the mask and gets really excited about overthrowing the system and hacking the system, and sort of embraces the idea. And what he says is that essentially that's the genesis of that personality, was, you know, which again, I mean, I think maybe that's that there's some realism there, that, you know, you don't have a dissociative break and suddenly you're two personalities. It's like that was Elliot was deciding that he believed in it. And then at some point, Elliot had a debate with himself about whether that was the right path to go down.
Well, and he also says, and this was in a narrative sense, at that point, he says, it's not going to be just the act itself. It's after the act that we've got to work even harder.
Yeah.
And Darlene brings that back to him when they're sitting at the table. Now, speaking of sitting at the table, are you having an issue with this? Is his mom is, I mean, quote me if I'm wrong, her mom.
Yeah.
And she has zero, well, I don't even think Elliot has that much relations with the mom on screen. And she certainly doesn't. Like, you would think that they're, you know, just meeting in an abandoned house.
Yeah, we see Elliot in this house a lot, and the mom, I think we saw her in the first episode, and we see her, she's almost like, I hate to say it, but it's almost like the mother in Psycho, right? Like, who is not spoilers for Psycho, is not actually there. She's a skeleton with a wig, because she's like, we see her back, like watching the TV, sitting in a chair. And, you know, there are a lot, without getting into a lot of the details, but, you know, there are a lot of fan theories, because there were a lot of fan theories last year. And I think a lot of those fan theories are questioning what we're seeing in this house. Like, is Elliot really at his house? Is his mom really there? What is really going on with where Elliot is? And I think it's valid, because it does seem like they're almost in, like, nowhere when they talk. It's like, you know, the mom is apparently there, or at least we're led to believe that she's there, but they are talking about her. You know, she, you know, Darlene doesn't want to be there, and says sort of negative things about her. And they basically don't talk about her. And it's weird. It's really weird.
Yeah, I even like speculated, even though I will debunk my own speculation, which is that it was them talking online, because as we know, Elliot gets the itch again and decides to do some work for Ray.
Right.
And I thought, well, maybe that's, you know, his envisionment of that conversation. There's nothing narratively to show you that. So that's why I debunk it. But it was just a thought that I had at the time.
I mean, I think you're right to debunk it, but I think that's also a good thought that because we're seeing Elliot's view of interacting in the world, I don't think it would be against the rules for the show to portray scenes where people are having a conversation and have it later be revealed that they weren't actually physically present when that conversation was happening.
I wouldn't feel robbed.
Well, this is definitely not Johnny Mnemonic. Thank goodness for that. Although maybe New Jersey factors into both, but that's about it. Let's see what else. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, the mom's thing. We get what you said about the how he says it's not just what happens during, but it's what happens after. This is really the motto of this season, right? This whole point of this season is we did the hack. Now what? That wasn't the end. That was the beginning. And with Elliot like completely unable to function at the beginning of this season, then Darlene is taking on his role and trying her best, but she's also going to him and saying, I have to get your help. And that leads her to, and with their, cause they're trying to surveil the FBI and they also go to what's her name? Angela and, yes. Try to get her to drop something so that they can, threatening her with the fact that she brought that CD in that started the whole hack because they want to hack it in there. And it's very much like they're sort of spinning their wheels. Like Elliot is a major piece of this, which is why Elliot agrees to help Ray, because that's like a lifeline for him to get to a computer, which I will say is a red flag, because Elliot could probably get to a computer everywhere if what we see is what we believe. I don't think he's being held captive in his mom's house, right? And yet he seems to feel like the only way he can get to a computer is to agree to help this guy, who we don't really understand their relationship, fix his computer, which I think suggests that something more is going on here, whether it's his relationship with Ray or whether it's Elliot's relationship to technology. Can he, you know, is he under lockdown? Is he being watched at his mom's house? Is he not at his mom's house, but somewhere else? It's unclear. It's unclear. But I think theories would be good, because clearly something, the people who've got theories, I think they're onto something, because there's something going on here.
Well, Ray is a very interesting character.
He really is.
And when he decides to work for Ray, you know, Ray says there were many people in history that heard voices.
Yeah.
And we also learn that Ray also, he has... Did he lose his wife, or yeah. He's on? Is that what it is?
No, I think
I
think he lost. I think he lost his wife, and then he talks about, like, you know, Jesus heard voices, and all these all the prophets heard were people who heard voices. So maybe you're gifted.
And he said you could use this as divinity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I find to be very interesting that he just said it with such gravitas, but it was also. What we know of Ray now, Ray is a manipulator.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because in the Logic Bomb episode, we meet Elliot's hacking the FBI, but he's also sort of like keeping some windows open, doing what he's supposed to do to upgrade the Ray's server. And he at some point says, I need the guy who, there's encrypted stuff on here. I need the guy who had who set it up. RT, they say. And they're like, well, we didn't really leave on the best of terms, but I can get him there. I'll make it happen. And then the guy shows up and he's been beaten up. And So it's very clear that, like, he didn't want to be there. And Ray had him beaten up and brought to Elliot. And they have that little conversation on the keyboard. And Elliot's slowly figuring out that something is going on here. And in the end, you know, Elliot looks and sees what Ray told him not to look at, which is what Ray's server has on it, which I'm not sure how realistic that is, that you would be able to do all this stuff to the server without actually looking at any of the content. Cause like to check to see if it was up and stuff.
You would think so. Yeah.
But regardless, RT, you know, gives him the logins, and he sees that this is it's very much like that story about that guy who had the like drug emporium that was on the dark web. I hate to say
it was the documentary The Dark Web by Alex Winter, formerly Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Oh,
yeah. Yes, yeah, I mean, there's a story about there's like some suburban dude in the Bay Area who was actually like one of the largest drug dealers in the world, and it was all happening on like Tor, where it was double encrypted stuff, triple encrypted, like super not on the web per se, but you could go there and you could pay, and they moved drugs around, and this is very much like that, where it's drugs and human trafficking and weapons, and that's all for sale on Ray's site, and they pull Elliot out of his bed and beat him up while Ray says, "I told you not to look," and that's sort of that's how that episode ends. So Ray is quite a piece of work, isn't he?
He's an enforcer, and I think we were all taking Ray at, you know, when we look at who's
Craig Robinson. Ray. Everybody loves Craig Robinson.
Exactly. He's and so that's what jovial. Makes it that much. Yeah, I think it's these characters like Joanna Wellick that like you're not expecting them to be, well, the monsters that they really are. You think that they're going to be somewhat, well, maybe not Joanna lovable, but you want Craig to be lovable, and he's clearly not, and he means business.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's interesting because you could argue that between Elliot and Mr. Robot, Elliot is just as dangerous as he is, as Ray is, and Ray doesn't realize that, maybe. And I think that might be an interesting spin that may come, is that if you piss off Elliot / Mr. Robot, you know, this isn't some guy who's broken and, trying to stay away from these things that have broken him, that you can exploit to do your thing. And maybe there's another twist there where Ray knows exactly who he is. But I suspect that the truth is that Ray thinks this is another malleable, mentally ill person with some tech knowledge that he can use on the cheap in order to do his bidding, in order to keep his business going.
And that's exactly what I thought he was going to do.
And that Elliot could ruin him. Like if you get on the other side of him, he could destroy you, because we see that in that first episode of the first season where he destroys the guy. In fact, they make a reference to that, right? The sandwich shop guy.
Yes.
I think it's an interesting thing where he's getting beat up and this guy is scary, but let's not forget what Elliot has done. Like he's done a lot of things, and based on what we think maybe Mr. Robot did when Elliot was blacked out, that includes like ordering people to be killed. So I think there might be a turnabout there, but it's a really interesting dynamic, and we don't really know enough about Ray and what his deal is and what he knows about Elliot.
And do you think Romero was killed by Mr. Robot, or is this some other entity that we have yet to see? Like, perhaps Tyrell cleaning up messes, but I don't see how he would know who Romero is.
I feel like, okay, so we know that the FBI knew about Romero.
Yes.
And I said when we learned that piece, I said, aha. And Lauren said, well, the FBI didn't kill Romero. And I said, well, no, but if the FBI knows about Romero, maybe other people know about Romero, and it's not necessarily
the dark army.
The dark army. Exactly right. I still think it's entirely possible that Mr. Robot had Romero killed because he was cleaning up. It's like that scene in Goodfellas, right? Where it's like, you know, you guys are talking, you're going to mess this up. Like after the big job, they pulled the big job. And now if there's some people who are loose ends, who are not keeping it locked down, you think Mr. Robot would not be ruthless enough to have those people killed? I think he would be. Especially if Elliot's not there to provide a conversation, right? Because I do believe, really, that like Elliot is a guard against Mr. Robot. When they work together, they work at their best when Elliot is doing stuff and Mr. Robot is sitting on his shoulder, being a contrarian, right? But in this case, it's just like unrestrained Mr. Robot. Could he have had this guy killed? Yeah, I think totally. But I think you're right. It could also very much be another player, whether it's whatever is going on with Tyrell Wellick, if he's even still around, or if or something involving the Dark Army, because the Dark Army is super fuzzy, right? We know that they were involved in season one. We saw the guy who was the liaison who worked with Darlene, and then of course Elliot met White Rose, which brings us to White Rose.
Yeah.
And we got to talk about it. So we see White Rose. There's that amazing scene where White Rose is getting on her makeup, and, mm-hmm. and she's talking on the phone, and she's talking on the phone in a man's voice, and then she hangs up and uses her woman's voice, which I thought was really interesting about how White Rose is living both lives. And then in Logic Bomb, we get to meet White Rose, who is the Chinese Minister of State Security.
This is, first of all, Sam Esmail must have loved Miss Saigon and loved BD Wong, because BD Wong is incredible.
He's so great. I just laugh out loud sometimes. Not because he's funny, but because he's so brilliant. Like in all of the scenes that he's in here, and especially in Logic Bomb, it was melting my brain how good he was. That scene where he's taking our friend FBI agent Dom around his house. And there's like, he's got like eight layers of things that he's piling on and saying all at once super intensely. It's just like, oh my God, just so great.
And the fact, all right, so let's break down a couple things. Now, the Dark Army did know that Agent Dom had put together that request on and had that information about the bullet casing. Because remember, Darlene's boyfriend shows her that, and in fact, White Rose looks at that on her pad.
Right.
So he clearly knows. You know, and they're inviting the FBI to China.
And that's how the FBI information about Romero could have gotten back to the Dark Army and had them, they could be just as responsible for killing him as anybody else. Not necessarily happening that way, but it's not impossible. That's a pathway.
And we know White Rose is very, very interested in time and giving time to certain people. Like when he met with Elliot in season one, what do you have, like 5 minutes? That was it, and if that, and to talk to her,
and she had like the watch and gave him a speech about time, and now we see the house that's full of clocks, and it's like, wow.
and he almost starts to break down when he discusses you know almost the effect of him. He wants to live as much of a life and these alternate realities as he can.
Yeah.
Like there is a reality which none of this happened, and he's living it through two very opposing forces. His quote sister, who is head of the Dark Army, and himself, the head of the Ministry of Security.
And I think that's the best. I mean, you could question whether the Dark Army is an arm of the Chinese government, but I think your reading is probably the right one, which is Minister Zhang is in charge of state security in China, but he is essentially also working on his own as White Rose, and she's the leader of the Dark Army. And I feel like the reason that he takes Dom on the tour is because she's the one who asks about the Dark Army,
you
and she cuts through all the crap, right? All the FBI guys are like, oh, it's very an honor to be here, and we really want to meet with the Chinese officials about the hack and take us to your facility that was hacked. And she's like, can we talk about the Dark Army?
Right, and everybody's just like, what?
Don't mention the Dark Army. But and so in that shocking final scene that I didn't see coming, where people just walk into the lobby where they're the FBI agents are having coffee in the hotel before they go out to meet with the Chinese officials about something or other, and people with automatic weapons just come in and start shooting FBI agents in the lobby. And it's a really great scene. It's, you know, we're following her. She grabs a gun and tries to defend herself and all that. Part of me thinks she was this is about her, that like she's the they're making sure that she didn't get shot, right? And I think maybe was on purpose, that she has gotten their interest in some way. But it was certainly shocking to see, because that's no matter how you play that, that is a massacre of FBI agents in China who are there on official business.
And if I'm the leader of the Dark Army and I want to make a statement, I kill everyone in a lobby except for you and let you know you're going to live, but you're going to do what I say.
Yeah. Or they want more information from her. How they use Ancient Dom is a good question. But I felt like almost like they like that White Rose liked Dom because she got it. Like she was right. And I think this show, so much of the show is about people who are outliers, people who are just a little bit ahead. And White Rose is clearly like that. Elliot is obviously like that. And I got to say, I kind of think Agent Dom is like that too, right? She's one step ahead of everybody this whole way. She's bursting through all the barriers. And I wonder if maybe White Rose sees something almost like of a kindred spirit in Agent Dom, that like she's totally playing on a level that her colleagues aren't. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and we know that she doesn't sleep well. She doesn't have any relationships. You know, we've kind of gotten that vibe from her. She right. also, well, even when we first met her, she was speaking Arabic, and you know, making jokes in Arabic, which was a little like, huh, who is this person? Then we come to find out she's, you know, also the person that interviewed, what's his face, Gideon.
Oh yeah, right, right, right.
And just brings a sandwich to it. That right. was, you know, it was just.
And whoever really, killed, we have to say, bookmark the whoever killed Gideon too, because again, we could assume that's Mr. Robot, but not necessarily. So, same right. thing. Yeah, there's so many pieces here. That's one of the things. Like I said, that's kind of what I like about the ride is I'm sure if I watched this another like five times and made a chart, it would all. Be a little bit clearer, but I kind of don't want to do that. I don't know if you feel this way, but I kind of like, I'm enjoying the fact that I'm watching a magic trick, and that one of yes. the ways that they yes. give, they do a magic trick is they distract you, right? And I'm kind of like, okay with the disorientation and distraction that makes me, you know, I'm not trying to look too far ahead and do that much extra work, because I kind of like that it's just taking me on the ride, and I can't, it's not linear enough that I can guess about what's going to happen next.
I without sounding, you know, with total agreement, but I am in total agreement. The ride is much better than trying to solve the puzzle. You know, the puzzle we know at the end will be, you know, for the most part, it's going to be solved. There's sure. going to be some sort of question at the end, but we'll all say, wow, at the end. And I, you know, during scenes, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe this is even happening. But it's the ride is much more valuable. And I think that's the beauty of the whole series is the ride, rather than doing the conspiracy notions and we all put our pictures on the wall and start, you know, putting up our yarns to each picture and see what the connections are. Sometimes you guys got to say, who cares? Let's just
right.
go.
Right, right. I mean, it's the I always quote a line from MASH. Which is, you just pull down your pants and slide on the ice, right? Eventually, you're like, whee! Just don't worry about it. Like, just right. let go and slide down the ice and have a good time. And I have that moment with Mr. Robot some, where it's like, I could put in a lot of work and come up with a lot of theories. And maybe even, I mean, it's a little harder than something that's more linear, but you could probably do it. And I kind of... First off, I think it's so twisty that you're going to have an infinite number of possibilities, so you're going to get frustrated anyway. And that's it for me. It's enough to stop and say, "Look, I'm not going to frustrate myself about this. I'm gonna have some theories, and I'm gonna notice some themes, because I really enjoy that there are themes in these episodes. But I'm not going to try to sort of unravel it, because I kind of don't want to see how the magic trick works. I just kind of want to see the magic trick."
Well, Tyler Durden said it best. He said, just let go. Stop, you know, don't go to your power animal. This is real. Just allow it. Mm. Allow it to just wash over.
Well, and Fight Club is definitely a huge influence on this show, for sure. What have we not talked about?
Well, Angela Moss and her boss.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That seems to be – and this yeah. is where I start to – I don't lose interest, but I get real confused, because I'm seeing a lot of cool stuff happening, and then we're talking about this agreement and what was pulled off the table and what wasn't pulled off the table.
Yeah.
And like this third party, and apparently this is the big one, the third party to look at what was going on at this site.
Yeah, the
E-Corp, and that was the one thing that wasn't changed.
The E-Corp thing that has been laying in the background for a while about the fact that Elliot's dad and Angela's mom died of exposure to some chemical because of the malfeasance of E-Corp. And it seems like this is still, you know, there's some piece of information there. I've never really been excited about Angela trying to be a corporate drone at E-Corp because I've never really bought it. And I figure like if it's a straight story where she really is this, I don't buy it because I don't believe she'd do that as a character. And if it's all her kind of as a setup to get as high up as possible to do as much damage as possible, I'm not sure I buy that either, because I don't think I would buy that they would let her. And then all the corporate stuff with the CEO of E-Corp and that he has the two other executives, you know, he gives them to her basically to ruin, and she does.
Yeah, so he kind of sacrificed them to show her good faith.
Yeah, and then you got the question of like what he's doing. He's meeting with the government, and then there's this. Yeah, she's got this concern about the independent investigator into that accident. We also have seen White Rose, or at least Minister Zhang, having met with them in like the last shot of season one. Right, there's the cabal of industrialists or whatever. Although now that we can say, okay, well, but if he's meeting as Minister for State Security, but he's also White Rose, perhaps that there's an even bigger setup happening with the Dark Army that's even bigger than what F Society was doing, and it involves even more about like what happens after the hack. But I find myself, as fascinating as that is on an intellectual level, I find all those scenes to be really boring because I kind of don't care about the E-Corp machinations. It's like the least interesting thing in the show to me.
I'm fascinated by more the head of E-Corp and how just his vocal tones and the way in which he speaks is so disarming to me. Like these big pauses between things, and I'm going to take you to dinner. I know the chef.
And was crazy.
It's just really bizarre, and I didn't know where it was going. But he's one of those guys that it's like, our company is too powerful to fail, and you, the government, know this. And the president doesn't see this as a problem yet, but I will get to talk to him at some point.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's a commentary that character exists, and you're right, the performance is really, really good, and he's a fascinating, his way of talking and all of that is fascinating. I kind of feel like that's a commentary on, it is what it is, which is, who is a person who runs a company like this? Who is that man who is the CEO of one of the world's largest companies that is so powerful that like the president of the United States is almost inconsequential to him because he'll get what he wants? And how does that person, who is that person, and how do you have a personality like you have to run that company and be that one of these oligarchs, one of these people that's just in charge of the world essentially, that F Society is trying to overthrow? And on one level, I think that's what is going on with him, is just, you need to spend some time with this guy to see, this is the guy. These are the people who run the world. I think maybe it is that simple on one level, is just, you know, for you to despise. Also, let's say it, for you to root for the terrorists, which Mr. Robot kind of wants you to do, right?
Right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
You need to feel like a revolutionary. You need to feel like these are the people we need to overthrow. And so maybe that's part of the CEO of E-Corp, is we need to see him in all of his, through Angela's eyes, in all of his decadence and arrogance and evil, and also the banality of his evil, that he's just this dude who likes to go to this restaurant and all of that. You need to know all of that maybe in order to feel like, yeah, we totally do need to bring Evil Corp to its knees. I don't know.
And I'm wondering if there's going to be a switcheroo where we end up rooting for him, or somehow liking him in some way, or understanding where he's coming from. Will that happen? I don't know. But I could see that being a twist of fate where we're actually going backwards and saying, man, Elliot's wrong. this guy is really trying to do the right thing and keep everybody safe, and in it's in the public's interest that he survives all of this. But I don't know. It could be an interesting turn. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and I don't care if it does. I'm here for the ride.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it keeps coming back to that, is that this is a ride. And I read a review of, I think, Init One that said that or a couple of reviews that said sort of like Mr. Robot is like off the rails and using its own stash and lots of metaphors like that for this season. It's like Mr. Robot's, I just don't agree. I mean, Mr. Robot's being Mr. Robot. This is just more Mr. Robot. Maybe it's a little more Mr. Robot-y than it was because it's a little more assured and it's got a little more room to play with and it's got a little more time, but these are not new games. Maybe they're new moves in the game, but this is the show that it was last season, where it is complicated and there's lots of weird things. I think people maybe reacted a little negatively to having Elliot sidelined at the beginning, because it is a show about a guy who's a brilliant hacker and he didn't type on a computer for 3 hours. I get that, maybe, but otherwise I'm enjoying it because it is, it's doubling down on what it was last season. It's not trying to, kind of keep it level with last season or slow it down because now they're trying to appeal to a broader audience. It's, I think, just as impenetrable and off-putting and weird and complicated as ever. And I'm enjoying the ride because of that.
Yeah. And if you stack it against any, of the popular TV shows, hands down, it's got the most unique storyline and the interweavings that I've ever seen. I mean, what they do in what are they going to do? 10 episodes, 12 episodes,
12 episodes. I mean, it was a 10 episode order, but two of those, the first and last, are essentially double length. So it's basically 12 episodes.
Okay. But you take that against anything that's gone 22 episodes per se.
Jeez, sure.
And it crushes it. Now, it does have an hour to do every one of those, but I mean, it's complex. You've got a host of characters all intertwined together. It's hard to discount this and to just puff it off. There's no way.
And not everything. I mean, this is a show that wants to be difficult, and that's okay.
It's impenetrable. It's encrypted.
Yeah, not everything, not everything needs to be, needs to go down easy. And I would be disappointed if every TV show was Mr. Robot, and I would be disappointed if every TV show was not Mr. Robot. It's good to have variety, but I'm glad that the world, that we live in a world where a show like this that is, has a lot of big ideas, has a lot of interesting characters, and is not afraid to be, make some moves that make me kind of gasp and laugh out loud, and also be as complicated and, it dares you to love it at points, and I dares you to understand it. And I think that's good. I mean, that's one of the things that impressed me about Breaking Bad and Mad Men, which are often lauded as two of the best TV shows of all time, is that both of those shows had something in common with Mr. Robot, which is I feel like none of these shows really care if you love them or not. Like, you gotta come to them. They're not going to come to you. And I like that. And again, for some viewers, the answer is going to be, yeah, I'm not going to you. Forget it. I'm out of here. But that's as a piece of art. I really like that not every TV show is desperate for your love, that some of them put you at arm's length and say, just stay over there and watch me. And sometimes Mr. Robot does that, just like Mad Men and Breaking Bad.
Now, I had just downloaded the soundtrack to season one. And I just want to say this. I don't know if we talked about it in the first episode, but the music has been incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And during the dream sequence, when Elliot is dreaming, I'm not a big Green Day fan, but I was like,
oh, my
God,
what
song is that? And it was Basket Case as a lullaby.
From an album of like rock lullabies, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, I had that same moment where I was like, what song is that? I know that song. What song is that?
You knew it. Yes. I did the same thing.
I finally looked it up and I was like, oh, yeah, of course, it's Green Day. But it was done in the like a little thing you clip on a kid's crib or something. It was like ding, 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 ding. But it was
the musicality of even scenes are just something to behold. I mean, it's something that you see in Hollywood, not on TV.
Yeah.
It's that kind of caliber.
Yeah, I sometimes incomparable panelist Brianna Wu is a big electronic music fan and does it when she's listens when she's running and stuff. And she was saying, I remember a few months ago, that she thought that the Mr. Robot season one soundtrack was fantastic.
It is,
and it is. That's again, you know, the story aside, I love the style of this show. I mean, from the music to the cinematography, the direction, the look of the show, it's unlike anything. And I mean, that's the another thing that I like about it is it's just great to watch it. Like when I do TV Talk Machine with Tim Goodman, you know, he talks about how every year he teaches this visual studies class, which mm-hmm. is, you know, it's all about like interpreting TV. And one of the things that he talks about, and you see it in Mr. Robot, which is why he teaches Mr. Robot now, is just the look of this show, the way that it's imparting information. It's just not like anything. I mean, there are other shows that have very strong visual styles. There are not that many of them that are like this one's way out on the edge in terms of being
it breaks visual what's the word I'm looking for? Convention.
Yeah.
It breaks a lot of visual conventions.
Well, Tim's story is that for season one, Sam Esmail would like tell the crew not to shoot it the way that they would shoot everything else. And they'd look at him like he was kind of crazy. And he'd be like, no, but this is what we're trying to do. And he had to talk to the crew. He had to talk to the directors because he wanted that look. Now in this season, he wrote and directed every episode. So not only does the crew know what the Mr. Robot look is, but he's the one who's making that look happen. And you can tell, but it was there from the very beginning where he was like, we're not going to shoot this like it's a CSI, right? This is going to be weird and the framing is going to be strange and we're going to have deep shots, like distant shots and super extreme close-up shots. And just on that level, it's fascinating. Yeah. So I'm still, now that we're, 5 hours in out of 12, I'm still feeling pretty good. It's, I'm glad Elliot's typing on things again, though. I will say it is nice to have that back.
It is nice, and I don't know any of the gibberish that he's typing, and yeah. Frankly, it all looks good to
me. It's close enough, like I said about Mr. Robot all along. I think it's close enough that you just kind of buy it. It doesn't seem laughable, like so much tech in TV.
I mean, it's not as good as CSI Cyber.
Or Scorpion, frankly.
Correct. I mean, that's top notch.
Yeah, that's the best. You only hope to approach that, really. So, that was something else I wanted to say that made me laugh out loud that I really like and I feel like has been part of the show from the very beginning, like literally the first thing in the first episode, which is he talks to us. He talks to the viewer. That's one of the things he does. He personifies us. He talks to us. And there's a moment where he's talking to his therapist about Mr. Robot. And he says, and then he does this with Darlene later too, where he says, you know, yeah, I talk to him. I see him. He's there. There's a great scene with Darlene where he's like, he's standing right behind me. Right.
Yep.
He's like,
yep.
Right. He's right over your shoulder. There he is. I can see him plain as day. Or maybe that's with Angela. So he admits to this. And he talks about it. And there's a moment when he's talking to the therapist where he says in narration, I didn't tell them about you. I just lost it because that's part of this story, right? Is that we are another person, another recipient of Elliot's thoughts in his head, and we I try to figure this out, but it's like we are representing his own internal narration, I guess, but we're personified. He thinks we're his imaginary invisible friend or whatever, which means we're kind of complicit. Like we're in there with him and Mr. Robot. We are the three things in Elliot's head: Elliot, Mr. Robot, and the audience he talks to.
We cannot be held harmless. We are just as guilty because we're over the shoulder. We were there at the incident.
Yeah, because we see all of it too, just like Mr. Robot does. We see all of it, and he talks to us when he wants to. And that, I like that in the first season, but as he has gone on here, that continues to just delight me. And those moments where he's talking about, like, because in the first episode this season, he's narrating and we think he's talking to us and he's not. And then later he has this whole conversation and then has an aside to us of like, I didn't mention you. Just amazing.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. All right. Well, as I said the last time, we don't know when we'll be back. We're not going to, you know, we're obviously not doing it episode by episode. I'd like it if we came back a couple of times and not just waited until the end. So maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, we'll come back with another roundup before.
Well, it gives people a chance to watch.
Yeah.
Because they, even though they have been watching, but now it gives them even more of a reason to look at it again if they haven't.
Yeah. These are ones I don't delete from my TiVo. I actually leave them on there so I can watch them again. I haven't watched them again this season, but I kind of leave them there of like, may need to refer to these later.
Like a gentleman.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to have them around. Reference material. It's good to have
the gentleman, I should say.
Mm. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode about Mr. Robot. And Mose, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I was very happy to be here.
Goodbye, friends.